Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we are here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or podcast us at iTunes or Podcast Alley or one of those other cool places.
That's so close, Mark. Actually, we're podcasting, and they can download us, but hey, it's cool. It's all cool. Hi, Mark.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm okay. Had an interesting little weekend.
How was your weekend?
Interesting.
What happened?
Interesting. Well, as you know, I went cross-country in the car with the four kids, including my two-month-old.
Sounds dreamy.
To Ohio for the weekend, and then back.
Sounds dreamy.
It's great.
Have any good food on your trip?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, literally, there is a McDonald's and a Burger King and a Kentucky Fried Chicken every 3 miles.
What else do you need?
Every 3 miles, there are those three things in a big little conglomerate, and then you move down the highway to the next exit, and there's another set of them.
What else do you need? Mom-and-pop restaurants?
Anything
local
else.
Produce?
Anything
yeah,
else.
It's hard. Everybody in the middle of the country, we know what you're going through. I used to, like, ride my motorcycle more than I do around the middle of the country. And once you get out toward Pittsburgh way and around the Midwest and the South, it's really hard to find local restaurants, you know?
Yeah. There was actually in the town we were staying in Portsmouth, there was a barbecue place. Apparently, they're taking their queue pretty seriously.
Queue is the one thing you can really find out there.
So I was surprised. I thought most of the barbecue in the country was farther south, but
now there's a lot of Midwest barbecue.
They're definitely taking it pretty seriously. Although the family got together in Ohio, Jennifer's family, and we met at this restaurant. It's a chain restaurant called Golden Corral. I had never been there before, and what I was wondering as we went in. When they say Golden Corral, are they referring to the cuisine or the people that they're herding into it? So as we walked
buffet,
in,
a buffet, I take it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. As we walked in, we were all kind of mooing and lowing.
That's right. Yeah.
But I gotta say, as far as those kind of places go, a million miles ahead of the fast food restaurants that we encountered. You know, a mediocre restaurant. I don't have a ton bad to say about it. You know, they were refreshing the buffet plates fairly frequently, which you need to do if you're going to have a buffet. And it wasn't, there was nothing that was terrible, nothing that was.
We're very fortunate in New York and New Jersey to have a lot of local restaurants. And you see that, actually, we belong to the New Jersey Restaurant Association, which is the trade association here in Jersey. And the New Jersey Restaurant Association is a member of the National Restaurant Association. But whenever we get together with national stuff, I sat on the board of directors for a long time, for 10 years. And whenever we would get involved with the Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, it was striking to see the difference. And often we had differences of opinion and differences on policy because nationally most restaurants are just chain restaurants.
Yeah,
and
I got to say, I can't think of four restaurants that I saw on the entire trip that were family.
Right, Mr. Libretti's Italian restaurant.
Owned restaurants. And now, again, you're on highways. We're traveling.
But it's demographically, it's true across the country that the mom and pops, you know, in New Jersey, we have a lot of them. And we need to, in New Jersey and New York City, we need to, you know, celebrate the richness of that. And it's really great to have real people cooking real food. And I think we're seeing a resurgence in the country of that and a resurgence of the place of good food in the culture. And actually, later in the show, we have a guest coming on, a guy named Richard Grassman, who's working in the schools in New York City to bring culinary careers and culinary education and education about food to kids in New York City. This guy has been featured on Nightline and the Today Show, and he's been written about in the New York Times. And, you know, I think this is a great hope for our country. And you see people, these celebrity chefs on television, I know that, Mark, you and I make fun of them often, but they bring the idea that, you know, there's something else, there's something greater. And I think, you know, you really can't get what the essence of food is by watching it on TV. You just can't. But
was that a shot at somebody, the essence of food?
No,
I'm just wondering if that was.
It really wasn't. But, you know, it does bring out the idea that, you know, you kids today are fascinated with.
Bam!
I hate that. Yeah, I saw him the other day, and he put together this dessert, right? And he took literally.
And he bammed it with hot pepper right at the end.
No, no. At the end, he took confectioner's sugar in a shaking can and went bam, 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 bam. And I thought, what are you bamming over? You're putting sugar on dessert. Well, I don't get it. I guess it's better TV. But you do get with young people today. I have a 12-year-old nephew, my nephew Connell, who is very into food and is fascinated with the TV Food Network. I think a lot goes on there. Now, I think the Iron Chef sort of misses it. Food is not a contest.
Mm-hmm.
But it's getting a lot of interest in young people today taking up careers in the culinary arts. And I think that's very good for the country. It's very good for the culture. It's very good for the land. And I'm all for it.
We're starting to care about our food again more. And, you know, that's the rise of this show. I mean, I think that this show doesn't exist 10 years ago because people just don't care.
And now it's at the lofty heights of Central Jersey, speaking throughout the land. So on the subject of chain restaurants, I want to bring up there was another part article in the news about McDonald's. And there was a lady, it was a fat lady, who went to McDonald's. And she did the anti-Morgan Spurlock. Morgan Spurlock did the film Supersize Me, where he really went over the top. And he went to McDonald's and ate at McDonald's for 30 days, I think it was. And every time they said, do you want it supersized, he would say yes. And he ate, you know, 5,000 calories
a day.
And he
ate three meals a day there and ate until he gorged himself. And the problem that Francis and I had with this is we agree with Morgan's point. We can't eat fast food every day.
We can't eat fast food as often as they suggest we do.
Right. It's not a way of life. It's an alternative for an emergency or for a special.
Or once in a while.
Yeah, special one day out. Or.
So anyway, this lady goes in. So Morgan's, but he went over the top because he didn't eat supersized meat three meals a day. You didn't need to. So what this lady did was she went and she lost a bunch of pounds on, how many pounds did she lose?
37 pounds.
But for eating at McDonald's for 30 days?
She ate it 90 days. 90 days at McDonald's. But she didn't just eat.
She ate one meal a day.
She ate 1,400 calories. So that's like a cheeseburger, no bun, right. and the apple salad.
I went to McDonald's and I lost all those pounds. All I ate was ketchup for a month. Great, you really proved your point. Super, I love it. And by the way, because of the ketchup, you probably get like hardening of the arteries or something else terrible happening to you.
But we were talking about before the show today is Morgan Spurlock did a little bit of the opposite of that because he went over the top.
Yeah.
It seems like we can't make a point in this country anymore without overdoing.
Well, we're going to come back and we're going to speak with Richard Grossman about doing food the right way and bringing it to kids and bringing jobs to our kids in the schools. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we are here talking with you about food. Our guest today is a gentleman named Richard Grossman. He's a chef. He's been an instructor for the prestigious French cooking school Le Cordon Bleu. He's author of At Home with French Classics, and he's the founder and president of Careers in Culinary Education Program in the New York City Schools. He and his program have been featured on ABC's Nightline, NBC's Today Show. He's been written about in the New York Times and so many other important national media.
Like the Restaurant Guys.
Like the Restaurant Guys now, adding to the jewel in his crown. He's helping kids to stay in school and get jobs after school and doing a great service to society by instilling the culture of good food in the next generation. Welcome, Richard.
Welcome. Thank
Richard,
you.
How are you today?
Very well, thanks, guys.
Welcome to the show.
You're doing some pretty extraordinary things with kids in school, and you're doing it in a way that hasn't really been done before.
Well, we're reaching young people with things that they enjoy doing.
Uh-huh.
And I think that turns them on to education and to focus on their future as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting because now you got into this not necessarily on a mission to keep kids in school and get them to graduate. That wasn't your initial motivation, am I correct?
That's right. Actually, when my book came out, I had the idea of reaching the kids' parents through teaching some of my recipes in the home economic classes in New York and trying to upgrade what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
In the classroom. But when I got into the classroom, I saw that these kids were the ones that had really been left behind by the system.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't prepared for either college or jobs. And when I saw some of them were really excited about food, that's when I turned the idea into careers through culinary arts program.
So you went into this trying to increase the good taste of America and wound up doing that, but as well turning it over into helping these kids find a job and find a place.
Right.
You know, everyone out there should know that the service economy, we in the restaurant business are the largest retail employer in the country. Most people in America have worked in a restaurant at one point or another. And we're seeing increasing professionalism in our careers. And when people talk about, you know, we need jobs for today because the manufacturing jobs are leaving, well, everybody can't go on to college and be a geologist. And so we need jobs like restaurant and restaurant jobs. And I think it's great what you're doing in putting it, you know, real jobs for these kids.
Yeah, I think some people don't realize that a lot of the jobs out there in the restaurant industry, in all industry for those who aren't educated very well, are to be the fry guy at McDonald's. And, you know, what we need to do is teach our kids to have a true skill set, not one that you can learn in 3 or 4 minutes, but one that expands upon that a little bit. And I think that's what your program's trying to do.
Yeah, we're trying to give them a good group of entry-level skills that will make them valuable to the restaurant owner and the chef, and make sure that they have the right attitude entering that job, mm-hmm. so that they can absorb everything that they need to learn and the willingness to try anything.
Now, you're getting a lot of press recently, and I know that there are a lot of applicants for each seat in your program, and so you can be very selective about who you can take. But
it depends on the school.
Go ahead.
You know, I mean, some schools and some teachers are fantastic, and they have a long waiting list.
Right.
Others have the program, and kids are, you know, scheduled for those classes or thrown into them.
Uh-huh.
So we don't always have totally motivated students mm-hmm. in every class.
Are you having success with the students that are getting thrown into the class as well as the other kids?
Yes. I mean, you never know. I mean, they get in by accident, and all of a sudden they get turned on to something new in their life.
You know, one of the things that I found most interesting, and I watched the Nightline program that you were on, and it fascinated me.
Thank you.
To see these young people today that are in your program, and they are so motivated, and they are so able to take criticism, and so respectful of the authority of what's going on there.
Well, that's something we train them and teach them about. And truthfully, anyone that's in school wants to succeed, because it's so easy not to be in school today.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what their attitude, if they have a bad attitude, it's usually, in my mind, due to insecurity.
Yep.
And they're putting up a front to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But once you can break through that and show them that to go from point A to point B is not difficult, and then they succeed, then they come back to you and say, how do I get to point C?
You know, I was amazed, though, at the reviews from the chefs who have taken your students in as interns and then hired your students later. And I was amazed as well to see them in the classroom, because it's hard. I mean, we have a society that where kids don't necessarily respect authority.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for kids to respect authority in this society, I think. And, you know, a kitchen, as anyone who's worked in a professional kitchen before knows,
there's a hierarchy.
It's not really a democracy.
Yeah,
you know,
for
there's
sure.
A lot of, like, don't ask questions. and I was amazed to see the way that your kids handle themselves overall. It's not just the cooking skills, but it's the demeanor and the way that they carry themselves. It's very impressive.
Well, it's something we learned. I mean, in the beginning, I can tell you, we had lots of kids that would walk out, and I'd say, what happened? And somebody spoke to me in a bad tone, you know, and it was in the middle of service, and people were yelling, and so they walk out. So we had to explain to them, you know, that the loud voices weren't meant. It was in the heat of the situation, and you mm-hmm. have to wait until after the service and talk to the chef, and all of that is, you know, empowering the person to survive in a situation, to understand what's happening. And it's not difficult if you take a young person and explain to them what to do in a scenario. And when that happens, they get through it and they come back and you say, gee, it worked.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes you need to teach someone how to react. What's an appropriate reaction? Walking out is not an appropriate reaction in a restaurant.
Exactly.
The appropriate reaction is to wait till things calm down and then discuss how things went. I mean, we do that almost every night. We have meetings with every single one of our, someone meets with every single one of our employees at the end of every night to discuss what happened during the night and how it could go better.
But it's amazing. But it's amazing for you and your organization to have taught kids this young, because if they try to learn those lessons out in the field, they're much harder to learn out in the field once they get into it.
You're right. And that's that's why I chose to do this at the high school level rather than out-of-work population.
And, you know, when I recently had an interview with a guy who worked for us a long time ago, and he had had a job in the interim, wherein he had been a sous chef at a fairly good place for a long time. And he lost his temper and he walked off the line in the middle of service on a Saturday night. And we had a polite interview. And when I found that out, I said, well, you know, thanks for your time. And he said, you know, I feel like I threw away 10 years of my career by doing this. And I said, well, you know what? You did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if kids can learn that young, that can really provide them with a lot of lessons, whether they stay in the culinary arts or not. And listen, everybody, there's a crisis in the American graduation rate. We stand at 68% graduation and lower than that in minority and disadvantaged kids. And here we have Richard Grossman, who's doing something really good about it and good for the kids and also good for our culture. And we'll talk more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:25.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We are the Restaurant Guys. Today we're talking with Richard Grossman, who's a chef and a founder and president of an organization called Careers in Culinary Educational Program in the New York City schools. Francis was just talking about the graduation rate, how in the United States it stands at 68%, and even lower in our inner cities.
Right.
How is your program affecting the students that are in it as far as graduation rate and how they're doing in their other classes?
Well, I don't have, you know, hard figures, but I have word back from the teachers.
Some anecdotal evidence, as it were.
And they say that if it wasn't for their culinary program, these kids would not be in school. And when you speak to the kids, they say the reason they go to school is for the culinary program. So at least we're keeping him in school, and that helps the graduation rate.
One of the kids that was interviewed on Nightline said that his mother said, he said, yeah, he used to be like a low C student, and now he's a B student because he's not allowed to be in the culinary program if he doesn't stay in school.
Right.
And he needs to read in order to be able to do the recipes and the work in the classes for CCAP.
Right.
So you're seeing other subjects go up as a result of,
definitely. I mean, every person that we have competitions at the end of the year for seniors, and we give scholarships to go on to culinary schools. And I can't tell you how many transcripts I've seen where freshman and sophomore years, they were D's and F's, and junior and senior years, they were A's and B's.
That's awesome.
And when you ask the student what happened, they said, well, I got into this culinary program, and I got focused, I got excited, and I saw the reason that it was needed to work on these academics, and I said, was it difficult? And they usually said it was easier because they didn't have people on their backs complaining, so forth.
Well, also you see a reason for the math that you've been taking.
Yeah.
You see a reason for that English class that you're in, for the reading that you're doing.
I think suburban kids in wealthy districts often, you know, you see the light at the end of the tunnel. You see everybody around you. They go through college, they get out of college, they get a good job, et cetera, and so forth. And I think, you know, I've lived in cities my whole life. And in the city, it's harder to see why you're going to school because you think, oh, well, I'm going to wind up on welfare anyway.
Yeah.
And then you show them a light at the end of the tunnel. You show them you can get out of school and either go to college or get a job that pays well. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't go to college. And I think that seeing the light at the end of the tunnel really is inspirational to you.
Francis, you work in restaurants. What do you mean pays well? You know better than that.
Relatively. Our guest is Richard Grossman. He's a chef. He's been an instructor for the French cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu. And he's the founder and president of Careers in Culinary Education Program. And we're going to talk with him more in just a moment about how he's giving kids hope and increasing the culinary landscape in America. If you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Morning, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com. Today we're talking with Richard Grossman. He's a chef. He's been an instructor in a prestigious French cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu. He's an author of At Home with French Classics, and he's the founder and president of CCAP, Careers in Culinary Education Program. Richard, you've gotten a lot of help from celebrity chefs. Who's getting involved, and how are they helping?
I would say all the top chefs in New York get involved, from Danielle to Thomas Keller to...
And what are they doing?
Oh, number one, we have a benefit each year. This year will be March 1st, where 38 of them will be cooking as we honor Thomas Keller this year.
Did Thomas Keller come through your program?
No, but he has our kids working for him out in California and New York. And that's, you know, oftentimes that's where these chefs meet our kids for the first time, because they assist them at the benefit.
Interesting,
yeah. That's great.
And then we have other chefs that adopt schools, and they come in regularly to mentor the students, tell them about the industry, what it's like to be a dishwasher, and from there prep cook, and what they can expect on the job. And then the kids that are really excited, they often offer shadowing opportunities for them, so that they can go in and see what it's really like. And if they show good interest on the job, they're often offered jobs. So it's... We count on the chefs in the industry to be the mentor at the workplace. It's oftentimes very difficult for a young person to go into a new situation unless there's somebody there to guide them. And so we try to make it easy for them entering the kitchen or the dining room. And the same thing when they go off to college. We always have somebody at the college to... greet them and to take them through what a beginning student will have to go through.
One of the things you need to realize is you're doing great service to the restaurant industry at the same time. It's very, very difficult to find people with the proper and appropriate motivation in this business.
Well, you know, when I started, the first time I asked the chef what they needed for entry level, and they said, I need them to show up on time.
Yeah, not just show up on time. You need a desire. You need someone who wants to do it.
We now say that if I send you somebody, they'll show up on time. They want to work. They want to learn.
Right.
They have basic safety, sanitation, and knife skills.
Right.
And they're not afraid to use them up. That gives you attitude and a few skills, and you know exactly where to start them.
Not afraid to use them up. They could be an owner.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what's funny? You know what's funny, Richard, is I mean, I think that what you do here is really great, and I think that one of the things that, you know, we have a restaurant that was instrumental, I think, the restaurant industry in general was instrumental in redeveloping a city that was very distressed in the 70s, New Brunswick, New Jersey. And now it's a tremendous city. We have a lot of great restaurants in town, and the arts and restaurants were key, not the only players, but they were key to New Brunswick redevelopment. And what
that's happened in many cities.
And it hasn't, because it brings people on the street, it brings people together, it creates a locus of community. But one of the things that people often overlook, and I've had the great good fortune to testify before our state legislature a couple of times on restaurant jobs and how important they are. And why they're so important is because if you go into a distressed city and you bring in a technology firm, what that technology firm, yes, they'll need some building maintenance people, et cetera, and so forth, but most of the high-value jobs there are going to go to people that come from somewhere else. That go into a town.
Yep.
When you have a restaurant in a city like that, we hire locally whenever we can.
Yep.
And you can start. Yeah. And people have this unfair impression of the restaurant industry of, oh, what's he going to be, a cook? Oh, it's going to be a waiter. And yeah, you're going to start as a cook. Actually, you're going to start as a dishwasher.
Yep.
But all of the sous chefs I know, many of the sous chefs and chefs and chef owners of restaurants I know, did not go to college.
Right.
And it's one of the few career paths where you can achieve professional status by the apprentice method. And that's really appropriate and necessary for a lot of people.
My maitre d' started as a busboy.
And unfortunately, we've forgotten that in this country.
Your maitre d' also has an MFA, Mark.
Yeah, so what? But he was a really good busboy. A very well-educated busboy.
But yes, I'm sorry, Richard, I cut you off.
Yeah, I just said that, you know, we don't give enough credit to the apprenticeship programs that still exist, and we as a public, we look down on the crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame, because there are so many people who get pleasure out of using their hands, whether it be a plumber or a woodworker or a cook, and using that to develop a career which, as you all know, can pay much better than a college graduate can get, is something that's overlooked. And what we're trying to do in the front of the house, we've done it in the back of the house, and the celebrity chefs have brought fame to the kitchen. And where when I was young, my father was a surgeon, and he said, you don't want to go into that industry. And now you find doctors and lawyers very proud to present their son the chef,
yep,
or their
yep,
daughter
true.
The chef. And the front of the house has been denigrated for years because it's a place where people are waiting while they're waiting to do something else.
Mm. Well,
and
Richard,
we're going to change that.
I want you to know that Francis and I are working very hard to bring fame and fortune to the front of the house position.
Well, and the thing about the front of the house is, you know, I'm encouraged to see the increasing professionalism, and I think the wine world is leading the way,
mm-hmm.
because you have the Master of Wine program, the Master Sommelier program, and so many people are pursuing things on that level. But mm-hmm. Overall, I think you're absolutely right in that people are starting to treat true restaurant professionals with a lot of respect.
And we're working with the Federation of Dining Room Professionals,
uh-huh.
which has a whole series of certifications which are being accepted by the industry now. And they're training whole chains of restaurants at different levels, and their programs are being used at Johnson & Wales for the front of the house. So our students in the front of the house, where you have a pilot program just this last month, but they are coming out, if they pass the test, and only 50% did, with a being certified as dining room apprentices. And we are getting such rave reviews from Danny Meyer and other restaurant owners about the quality of these apprentices, that hopefully the industry will begin to understand that when they are an apprentice, they're coming in with some skills and attitude that will make them professional, that will stay with them. Because we are really looking at this program to ignite careers in the front of the house for people that never would have thought of looking at that as a career.
And I think that you use a very powerful word there, Richard. I mean, you use the word career, and it's a career as opposed to a job, and that's exactly what you're talking about and what we're seeing more of and what we need to see more of.
Well, people are paying a lot more for their food. Restaurants are producing excellent food these
mm-hmm.
days, and they now are looking to have good service. If you don't have good service, you lose your customer.
And we are becoming increasingly a service economy, and we need to make sure we have the people to fill those jobs and the jobs to fill. We're listening to Richard Grossman, who is the founder of Careers Through Culinary Arts Program in the New York City Schools, and he has a lot to talk to us about. And we're going to talk about the increasing professionalism of the American restaurant in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking today with Richard Grossman, who is the founder and president of Careers Through Culinary Arts Program in the New York City Schools. Hello again, Richard.
Hi. And, you know, we started in New York schools, but we're now in the Philadelphia schools, D.C. schools, Tidewater, Virginia, Boston, Chicago, Arizona, and Los Angeles.
That's great. Richard, do you know what schools are almost exactly between the New York City and Philadelphia schools?
Yours.
The
That's
New
right.
Brunswick schools, right smack dab in the middle.
We can have lunch with you and the mayor. We can set it up.
Well, I got to find the time to do it, but it's certainly something, Jersey is something that I've been wanting to do for years.
Hey, we would love to work with you on that, and I'm dead
that in any way,
and I'm dead serious.
We'll
how many schools in your area? High schools.
Well, we have each individual town has its own high school. So the problem with Jersey is home rule, which is why our taxes are so high.
I think
so,
that's one of the problems we've had too, is gathering enough schools in an area where there are jobs to be had.
Right. Well, New Jersey has the third highest number per capita of fine dining table service restaurants in the country in our tiny little state. When you consider that the bottom half of the state is not very populated at all, that's an incredible concentration of restaurants.
Right.
But the problem is each school district individually in New Jersey has its own superintendent and school board and one high school. And
they need to have a kitchen or a program in their school for us to help them.
Mm. Well, now, when you first started this in the New York City public schools, did you face opposition? Did some people look down their nose and say, you know, it's just training them to be waiters, we don't want to do that?
Yeah, well, it wasn't the waiters, because I couldn't even talk about that in the beginning.
Really?
It was cooks, and they didn't want them to be, you know, cooks in fast food. They didn't want them to be dishwashers. And so that's why I focused on teaching knife skills so that the students could go into prep jobs.
Right.
And although it was a great thing for the program and for the kids and for the parents and everybody else, it wasn't great for some of the kids because you really should start at the dishwashing position.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that people don't realize is, I mean, we had gotten 3 stars from the New York Times and been open for about 5 years, and I remember an evening where it was like the dishes needed to be washed and everybody
right.
else was busy, and there I was in my suit washing the dishes.
Yeah, and if you haven't done that position, you never respect the person who does
it. That's it, exactly.
And it's very important, as you know, that the team respects everybody.
You have to understand that every piece in a kitchen, like any manufacturing job, is a cog, and that they all work together. And if you want to produce great things, you have to have a great dishwasher, you have to have great prep people, you have to have great cold station people, hotline people, assembly people. They all have to work together.
And the best time to do it is when you're young,
yeah,
because you don't mind it. It's a first job, it's exciting, there's a lot of pressure. You get success when your dishes come out clean and everybody is happy in the restaurant that the dishes are there. So all of that is a great opportunity for a young person to get a start. And if you wait until you're 20 to get into the dishwashing position, you don't want to do it.
Richard, Judith Rizzo, who is the Deputy Chancellor of the New York City Board of Ed, said that you could not have understood fully the impact you were going to have, nor could you understand truly what goes on in urban public education. Was she right?
She was right in, you know, when I first approached the schools. But once I got into the schools, I saw the problem, and I also saw the solution. And, you know, as an individual, it's very difficult to affect a systemic change. But over the years, that's what we're doing, with not only for the schools, but for entry-level workers coming into the industry also.
But you know what I got out of all the coverage that I've watched, and I reviewed the coverage that I hadn't seen that I could in preparation for talking to you today. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is you've taken a whole approach, because we're talking about and we're focusing on the measurable success of that these kids stay in school and are more likely to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take it back for a moment. And, you know, our whole philosophy is, part of a whole life is that food is universal, is that when people have a love of food, that's often where culture comes together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what these kids also have, and what I see in these kids, is they've got a life skill, and they love food, and they love preparing food. The one kid in the, I don't know whether it was the Nightline or ABC, was preparing food for his mom and his sister
yeah.
at
mm-hmm.
home.
Yeah.
You know, people come together over food, and I think that in our disjointed culture, that's what we're looking for, a culture that's not based on the TV, a culture that gets people to come down and sit down and eat what someone has made and share time together. And that's what I see in these kids that mm-hmm. goes even beyond the job thing.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
It's a skill they can be proud of.
Yeah. I would say the relatively small percentage of the students in the classroom go into the industry,
mm-hmm.
and the rest get these life skills and ability to both cook for themselves and family, and it opens their eyes to a lot of communication among individuals and sharing of social differences and experiences, which is wonderful.
Well, and you know, the other thing is we talk about nutrition a lot, and we talk about real food, and I've lived in cities most of my life, and I've lived in sort of challenged neighborhoods at different times in my life. And in a challenged neighborhood, it's hard to find good food, and it's hard to eat nutritionally and eat well. And a lot of people who grow up in that environment don't understand food mm-hmm. and how to take care of themselves and their family. And your students also come out with that, don't they?
Yeah. Certainly do.
You've had some pretty nice prestigious placements of some of the kids in this program, especially when you consider that it hasn't existed that long. Why don't you tell us about a couple of those?
Well, I guess our number one is a young man who we sent to the French Culinary Institute, worked with Bobby Flay at Mesa Grill, then was hired by Olive's Restaurant.
Nice.
And he was an assistant pastry chef, then became the pastry chef, and now is a corporate pastry chef. And that went from like, he probably started at about $20,000, went to $30,000, to $60,000, to $90,000, and he's probably making over $100,000.
That's great.
And that's a kid who might otherwise have dropped out of school.
Oh, right. He would have been on the street. He said if it wasn't for this program, he'd be on a street corner someplace.
Or
he wouldn't be here.
And do you find that the current generation of people who have graduated through your program are now mentoring the next generation?
Yes, that's what's wonderful, because sometimes they don't appreciate what's happened to them for the first few years, but as they get out of school and they see other students with debts and they see fellow workers that aren't progressing as rapidly as they are, they realize what they've been given and they want to give it back.
Well, Richard, you have a lot to be proud of, and we're very honored that you took the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us today on The Restaurant Guys.
Well, I appreciate it, and I think you guys are doing a great job, and your restaurant certainly is doing wonderfully.
Thanks.
Well,
and
we're going to
put some links on our website over to your website so people can find out, maybe see how they can support your very worthwhile program. And then we're going to harass you and try and get you to come to New Brunswick and work in our school system.
You keep doing that.
Yeah, you haven't heard the last from us, I'll tell you that.
So
right
you
now.
Can look forward to our call. Thanks so much.
That's great. Okay, guys.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That was Richard Grossman. He's the founder and president of Careers Through Culinary Arts Program in New York City and throughout the country. A tremendous guy who's achieved awards from as high up as the White House for his tremendous work over the last 15 years. Absolutely fabulous. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hello and welcome back to The Restaurant Guys. You're listening to Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey.
And we just had as a guest on our show, Richard Grossman, who is just a fabulous guy. He's won the highest award that the White House gives out for volunteer work in America. He's won a James Beard Award for Humanitarian of the Year. He's doing great work for
really
food.
Really doing some special stuff.
For society.
And Tim Zagat is the vice chair of his organization.
Yeah, Tim
as well.
Zagat of the Zagat Restaurant Survey is the vice chairman of his organization. And his motivation, he says, for being involved is not so much to help the kids, although I'm sure that's also a motivation of his, but to see increasing professionalism in the American restaurant industry, and I think that's just fabulous. And we have, speaking of professional restaurants that are just fabulous, tomorrow we're doing a farmer dinner. We're doing a Jersey Harvest dinner at Stage Left. If anybody wants to come, you can check out the website.
Featuring 7 different New Jersey farms.
Yeah, go to stageleft.com, or you can dial up 732-828-4444. And we have 7 different New Jersey farms, 7 different courses. A couple of the farmers are going to be there, wine with each course. And it's, you know, Jersey peaches at the height of their season and Jersey tomatoes and Jersey corn. And it's going to be a great, great dinner.
It's going to be a great dinner.
And the corn isn't even picked yet.
I'm hungry already.
You know, they say, and here's the thing, Jersey is known, for those of you who are listening in the podcasting area, which is the universe, and aren't from Jersey, Jersey is known for corn and tomatoes. And the end of August is when we have both of our staples in season. But I want to tell everybody out there that while heirloom tomatoes are popular throughout the country, the Jersey tomato, the true Jersey tomato, is one of 7 varieties of tomato. Not to be confused with the Jersey beefsteak tomato, which is also very good. But Jersey tomatoes are really fabulous and unique and do particularly well when grown here in Jersey.
Yep.
And the other great thing to look at now is corn. Now, Jersey corn is very sweet when freshly picked. But what you want to be careful, when you're out in the supermarket and you see Jersey fresh even, you'll see super sweets or sweet corn. That's not Jersey corn. It's almost impossible to find Jersey corn except in some old farms because what those new hybrids, the sweets and the super sweets are, they have a lot of sugar. And they've been bred so that sugar doesn't turn to starch. And they taste very sweet, but they don't taste very corny. Mm-hmm. If you find true Jersey corn...
You're very corny, Francis.
I am very corny, but not, and I'm not as sweet as the true Jersey corn. But true Jersey corn...
Corn-like. We'll call you corn-like.
Is corn flake, you could call me. But true Jersey corn, it's very corn-flavored. It's very corny. Mm-hmm. And when the old adage is, if you pick Jersey corn, you should put the pot on the stove.
Right.
You know, get the water boiling, then run out in the field. You know, pick the corn and run back to the pot.
And if that corn has been picked really, really fresh... it will be super sweet all on its own.
Right.
It'll have all that corn flavor, and it'll have all the sugars won't have turned to starch yet. If you pick it at the right time and you eat it right away, it will be as sweet as can be.
But corn, especially if it's not a super sweet, needs to be picked that day.
Mm-hmm.
That day, because what happens with corn is as soon as it's separated from the stalk, all of the sugar in corn starts to convert to starch, and that's why it may even look good 2 days later, but it doesn't taste like it did in the beginning.
And that's why they're picking our corn tomorrow morning for our dinner tomorrow night.
And so you should check us out at StageLeft.com. You can always check us out at RestaurantGuysRadio.com. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.